welcome to Influential Visions. Here, we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. My name is Nathaniel Schooler, and I am your host today. Today I'm interviewing Donna Sarkar and Jeremiah Marble. Both are from Microsoft, and Jeremiah started the Insider program over there, and now Donna actually runs it. So it's very interesting.
Well, it's really great to be joined by you both.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us. It's so awesome.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So you're Jeremiah and you're, is it Donna?
It's Donna.
Donna. It is Donna. I'm not sure. I wasn't sure because of the spelling of your name.
It's more efficient this way for all you nerds, you know, N square, less efficient than nerd, and then single N.
You can call me a nerd. I'll let you.
I am calling you a nerd.
I am quite geeky. I'm
You're
not
there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can't program, but I am quite geeky.
You we say can that, get you to program.
Yeah.
I would like to learn, but
look, we've got a candidate.
We had a candidate,
but I'm just not sure, to be honest. My friend Eric, he's been
hassling. Don't worry, we'll make you do the thing.
He built me my new Windows machine. He's been hassling me for ages to learn how to.
I think we found a new victim, Jeremiah. Seriously. I think we found a victim.
Maybe
we have no idea.
Oh yeah.
The world of coding.
Oh yeah, it's magical. Magic.
So you guys both run, you've created the Windows Insider program, right?
Well, actually, Jeremiah and someone else started the Windows Insider program about 5 years ago. It'll be 5 years in October. Yeah. He started and ran it for like, what, 4 years?
Just about 4 years.
And then I came on board about 2.5 years ago. But the starting of the program, he should tell that story because I was not there.
So we started out life as essentially an attempt to get lots and lots of data in the guise of making the best operating system on the planet. And we realized that it's pretty important to, as we're building an operating system for everyone on the planet, that we get feedback from not only people who live in Silicon Valley and Redmond, Washington, but also people who live in Nairobi or live in Nigeria or people who live in Cambodia. So one of the things that has been probably one of the most gratifying things for me has been the ability to meet people all over the world and understand how they're using technology to transform their communities and their lives.
Yeah. So we started the program. How many people did you think you were going to get?
We thought we'd get like 5.
You, your mom, your sister.
Yeah. Literally, we tweeted it to my 3 followers. Yeah. Yeah. No, we built the servers to scale for about 20,000 to 100,000 people. And then quickly we realized we were on track to get over 1 million insiders sign up for the program in the first week.
Yeah.
So we rapidly
ran around
and cobbled together a couple more servers to handle the influx. And now we're upwards of 16 million people all over the world.
Yeah. It's pretty powerful. When I came on board, I used to work on HoloLens, leading the developer community there. And I'm used to a small, tightly knit audience of people. And I knew everybody in the HoloLens community because it's a new product. And here I show up like, oh, how many people do you have? They're like,
a lot.
8 million. At the time it was 8 million. I'm thinking that's a lot of people. But it's been really amazing because we've learned that insiders, they definitely want to co-create with us, right? They want to give us their input and feedback on products because they truly know what their communities need. Like, for example, pieces of feedback we get that are very legit are, we need Windows downloads to be smaller because our network speeds are not that great in Ireland, right? Or Australia, or, you know, anywhere in Latin America, most places in Africa. We in Redmond, Washington have never thought about download speeds because we live in a life of privilege. So they give us that kind of feedback. We also get really amazing feedback from people who are maybe low vision saying, actually, we need, you know, our narrator tool to read these buttons out loud or those buttons out loud, and they're not doing it properly. So we rely on our insiders to tell us how people in their communities use our technology, because there's no way that we can know how everyone in the world uses our tech. We just can't know it. So it's been an amazing learning, just like life-changing experience.
It's fantastic. It's such a big community as well. So you guys must know a lot about internal communication then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so internal communication is one of the things that has sort of helped us get mm-hmm. where we are. So there's sort of, we think of it as sort of ring theory, right? Mm-hmm. So everything from getting builds of Windows operating system out to the world, first things start out kind of rough hewn, trying to fit it all together and make things work. They're buggy and we don't know. And then as it goes progressively further outwards, it gets crisper and clearer and things make more sense as it gets more polished. So with our internal communications, it's very much the same way in that, you know, a lot of times we'll have an idea. Mm-hmm. So we have an idea that we want to learn more about how people are using their battery mm-hmm. In places that aren't here. We're like, we have an idea. We don't know exactly what to do. And we'll kind of work with each other to iterate on the idea and okay, who needs a battery? Well, people who are offline. Mm-hmm. Who needs a battery? Well, people who are traveling. Well, who are like that? Well, entrepreneurs. Where are their entrepreneurs? Well, there's a whole bunch here in Redmond, but there's also a whole bunch outside in the world.
Right.
Where would be interesting places to go? So, okay, let's go to Nigeria mm-hmm. and work with entrepreneurs in Nigeria to understand how they use their battery life. And so if we think about communications as sort of starting from one or two people who mm-hmm. want to communicate a message all the way out to who's going to eventually receive the message, who might not be privy to the internal decision-making that mm-hmm. we had. It's helpful to think about it in sort of an iterative mm-hmm. ring sort of theory that gets better and better and better as it goes along.
Yeah, we're a big experiment and learn team where we'll try, say there's a thing we'd like to communicate, like Windows Insider Program wants to encourage our insiders to do social good projects. Okay. We want this message to spread. Yay. So how do we do it? First, we'll create a message and try to flight that message with maybe five people.
What does flighting mean?
Flighting, it's like test out this message with five people that we know who are pretty close to our team. Right. So we'll choose won't choose our managers, but we'll choose other people.
They're really good getters. If you're listening, you're awesome.
We love you, managers. You're very good people.
Best managers
we
ever.
Never keep anything from you ever. Nothing. We would never do that. That's just not true.
Yeah.
Okay. So we usually would try out the message with a partner, maybe five partner trade teams, right? People we worked with before, people who don't think we're crazy all the time. And we'll get their feedback. So we'll get back on this message and we'll incorporate it. And we call this process co-creating, where we have an idea, we test it with someone, very specific, five groups of people. And these people are representative of the kinds of people we want to receive this message on the in general.
And it's sort of flipping the model on its head. Like in the old day, you'd sort of have this amazing idea and you'd sit in your cubicle and you'd work. And then when you were done, you'd hit send and it'd go out to everyone.
Everybody in the company.
But when you do things like that, it turns out not to work.
No.
So it's really important to get, even mm-hmm. before the idea is fully baked, the communication's out there, it's important to get feedback and to co-create with some of the people who would be the recipients.
We've also learned by doing that, it gets people bought into the idea from day one, right? Then suddenly our partners are like, oh, I want to plug into this too. So for example, we had the message of Windows Insider should be doing social good projects. So we reached out to our partners in Azure and they have this thing called the Microsoft Student Partners. And they said, oh, we want to plug into this because we want all of our Microsoft student partners who are the Microsoft evangelists on campuses all over the world to also be thinking about social good impact, right? Social impact. How can we use our tech for good? So they said, we would love for your insiders to plug into this. So now we are actively building a pipeline by which any insiders who are students can learn all the skills to become a Microsoft student partner as well. So next ring will be, you know, they're now evangelizing for us. So when you include people in the messaging, they tend to evangelize because it's now an us thing rather than like an us thing.
We kind of think of co-creation as kind of like rock soup. So I'm kind of hungry.
Yeah.
What am I going to have for lunch? I have this rock and I have some cabbage. Okay, throw it into a pot with some water. Yeah. Next person comes along and throws in a carrot. Yeah. Next person throws in some chicken. Next person throws in some parsley.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you have like this amazing stew that I can eat from.
Right.
But it doesn't start out with only your contribution. It takes the sort of work of everyone co-creating.
Exactly.
An amazing meal.
Mm-hmm. So that's our method. It tends to work quite well. So by the time it reaches upper management, you know, Satya and Kohir about
it. We love you. It's awesome.
We love you, Satya.
Give us promotions and raises.
Yes, thank you. So by the time it reaches Satya and Co, most people have already heard about it and they're not just like, these two are obviously insane.
What is going on with these people?
So by the time it gets up there, everyone already kind of knows and is bought in.
Yeah.
And we operate under the assumption that anything we come up with will go external. So we,
no secrets.
No secrets. Yeah. We don't keep, we're extremely transparent people. And every company should assume this. If you write an email, assume it will get
someone's
leaked.
Someone's going to take a picture. Yeah. Someone's going to like yeah. tweet it.
Assume it's going to get leaked.
So just write it as if it's someone, exactly. as if it's going to be in the front page exactly. of the New York Times.
Always. I know that's a long.
That's really cool. That's really interesting. So it's a bit like creating like an ice cream or something. Like if you're a, if you're an ice cream manufacturer, you might run a competition for people to taste an ice cream, right? So then you come up with the recipe, don't you? And it's exactly what you're doing with internal communications. It's brilliant. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's clearly working.
You have to co-create.
It's clearly working. You've got so many people involved with that.
We've learned a lot. A lot of the best learning. We also have a saying, sometimes you win, sometimes you learn.
Yeah.
We've learned a lot. Let's say.
Yeah. We've won a few things. We've learned a lot.
So in the process of some of the experiments that haven't gone as well as we had hoped, mm-hmm. We certainly learned how to do things better the next time.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, believe me. I understand that.
Yeah, I bet you do, Mr. 100 Podcasts in 100 Days.
Yeah, 100 yeah. podcasts in a very short amount of time, yeah.
Yeah.
So in terms of kind of managing teams, where do you start with that if you want to get something done?
So the way I think about managing teams is not so much managing, but more assembling a group of Avengers. Right? Because as soon as we get into the business of managing, that puts the responsibility on me, the manager, to manage all these people to do the thing, right? And it stops being about the individual and about the specialness of this unit we've created. So we believe in hiring very diversely, not from just how we look on the outside, but skill sets and backgrounds. So what we do is say, what are we trying to do? And usually it's something crazy and new and potentially frightening and something we have to communicate to upper management in a convincing way. So we've learned that if you hire really, really motivated people, it doesn't matter what skill sets you need to learn, they will learn the skills. So we've learned that as soon as you hire people who kind of want to do the thing, they will learn whatever it takes. So what I tend to do is build up a team of people who have varying skill sets and varying degrees of interest. Like I have a filmmaker on my team. Like we're all software engineers, but he's a filmmaker. I don't know why I need a filmmaker, but I think at some point I'm going to need a filmmaker, right? We've got a concept.
I need yeah.
one. You need a filmmaker. Yeah. Everyone needs a filmmaker. Clearly. Yeah. And what he brings to the
you
table.
You can't have ours.
You can't have mine.
You can no. bring to me.
No. But he can convince anyone to do anything, right? Because being a filmmaker, you have to go cajole these temperamental actors to behave.
With like no budget,
you know. So he can cajole anyone into anything, and he can organize a group of people to do a thing in one moment of time. So it's an amazing superpower he's got. Plus, he's a great photographer and videographer, which is a very good skill set to have when you're dealing with a community of millions of people. I've also got like a comic book expert who is also really into like nerd stuff. That's very helpful when you're dealing with a community of nerds, right? I don't know that much about Star Trek or Star Wars or all of this, but Brandon on my team is an expert. And then we've got Jason, who's done customer support forever. And he's just like, no nonsense can get to the heart of a problem in like 2 minutes. So these people, super different than me, but we've hired them to come together to kind of solve this problem of how do you manage this global community of millions of people. And I don't manage them. Each of us have like individual contributor work. My job is to come up with crazy schemes. Their job is to tell me no and also make some of them happen, right? So the way I think about managing teams is very much like figure out what you're not good at, hire for those things, and leave them the heck alone. Do not go micromanaging after you've hired people who are literally experts in their field.
So a couple other things to add on to that. Yeah. So first, the importance of hiring a diverse set of folks.
Oh, yeah.
And that's not only some of the traditional definitions of diversity. No. It's sort of like where someone grew up.
Right.
Like what are the set of experiences that led them mm-hmm. to this place? What are the things that they're passionate about? Where do they come from?
Right.
So if you even take a bunch of folks who may look the same mm-hmm. externally, all of them bring their own unique creativity and passion, and some of the outcomes of that is proven with data. But here are two anecdotes mm-hmm. from our team. So we were trying to get together and figure out what color should our T-shirt be, right? So very, very important team t-shirt. What color should our t-shirt be? And it's amazing how many opinions there are.
Yeah. So he and I decided we're going to just make a choice. We're like red.
Red is the best
red
color ever.
Red looks good on me, therefore we should use red.
So we're going to go with red.
Yeah.
And, you know, which is way less boring than dark gray or some of the other sort of like techie t-shirts.
Right.
One of the folks on my team grew up in Cleveland. He's African-American and from relatively lower income by background. And he pointed out very accurately that in parts of the United States, someone wearing a red t-shirt is perceived part of the Crips gang. And so you by wearing a red t-shirt, you're signaling something that you might not be intending, which is something that I had never thought of.
I'd never occurred to me.
It was just like literally something that never crossed my mind because I've only been to Cleveland for like 3 days, right?
Yeah.
So having that background made it possible for us to make even that sort of relatively minor decision of the t-shirt color. Another example was when we were working with a bunch of entrepreneurs in Lagos, Nigeria. One of the social entrepreneurs we were working with was working with a band of children to recycle trash. So they would convert the trash that was lying around and make it into something useful, like fuel to cook with. And so one of the folks on our team grew up in rural India, and she pointed out, hey, we need to be very, very careful, we as Microsoft, supporting this particular entrepreneur, because very easily it could be sort of against child labor laws. Mm-hmm. And so that's literally something that we're like, hey, we love recycling. We love the idea of transforming trash into something good. But like, we never thought about the social implications of supporting something like that. So the importance of diversity sometimes comes out in surprising ways over and beyond the business outcomes. The second thing that sort of Donna mentioned was the importance of focusing on the individual. So, you know, providing some sort of clear framework. Here are our goals. Here are the ways that we're proving that we're measuring that we're achieving these goals, but then allowing each person to bring their full self to work. And so, you know, you might not be expecting a filmmaker who happens to code to bring a tremendous amount of creativity to the project, but just that the fact that they're able to leverage some of the unique skill sets that are across the board would help out. Mm-hmm. And I think one last management trick that I have learned the hard way is the importance of providing, you know, like co-creating with them. Mm-hmm. Like no one's going to get it right the first time. It is a process of experimentation. Mm-hmm. It is sometimes you win, sometimes you learn. But sometimes people act in ways that they don't intend or they're delivering results that are under what you don't expect. So the importance of criticizing in private and taking someone aside and saying, hey, look, here are the expectations that we had. Here are some of the ways in which I think that, you know, the results could be better. What are the ways that we can work on that privately? And then when you want to praise someone, like, hey, you're doing a great job. You sing that from the rooftops. Mm-hmm. You're like, hey, you send emails to everyone. You mention them in a team meeting. You send it to their boss's mm-hmm. boss. And just praise loudly. And the effect that having public praise has on someone is pretty magnificent. So I think those are the three main management mm-hmm. techniques that I've learned in this role.
So I've got two more, which are kind of related. One is creating a safe space for everyone to bring their whole self to work, right? It's a big mission of Microsoft is bring your whole self to work and use Microsoft's platform to achieve your passion.
And the manager is really important in that.
It's really important because if the manager is like, oh, bring your whole self to work. Actually, why are you doing that in your spare
Tuesday,
time?
I need to be working on this other thing.
That's not helpful. Recently, we've heard of a manager being very critical of an employee, no one on our team, about, you know, working on a personal passion project at home and then talking about that passion project at work. Like, oh, I didn't know you were working on this creative project.
How dare you have a life outside of work?
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, are you sure you didn't use any work time for this? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I'm sorry, but that's very, very bad behavior. I consider that to be incredibly disrespectful because this is like saying, oh, you're a parent. You are not here exactly at 8 a.m. You know, how dare you, right? That's that kind of
thing. Oh, you changed too many diapers in your spare time.
Exactly, exactly. So
it's the exception, not the norm.
It really is an exception. When I hear it, it makes me really angry because what you're saying then is don't actually bring your whole self to work, right? So we are firm advocates to bring yourself to work. The other one is understand the currency of the human. So each person we manage or lead or have on our team have a different currency for what motivates them, right? Yeah. Some it's more opportunities. Others it's
fame.
It's fame, right? Like, I will drag you on stage and put a spotlight on you. Some people, that's their worst nightmare. Exactly. That's ours.
That's really yours.
We love fame.
Make me famous.
But some people hate that. They're like, don't make me famous.
Oh, no.
Right? Yeah. Like, we have someone on our team named Blair where he does not want fame.
Blair, looking at you.
Yeah. Sorry, Blair.
You're good at work, though.
He doesn't want me to drag him on stage. He doesn't want me to, you know, announce.
Petrified.
He doesn't want me to announce him on Twitter. He doesn't want these things. He wants to do a good job and be rewarded for his good job.
Very quietly.
Quietly. So it really is the currency of the human. That's been my latest learning, is the way I like to be rewarded is not like how everyone else likes to be rewarded. So it really comes down to a conversation with the person to ask a really important question, which was, when you did good work, what was the best reward you've ever gotten? And
oh, another one. Since I'm there anyway. People keep doing that to me, and I've been copying me on these. And I'm like, no, not another one.
No, not that.
So yeah, that's one thing we've learned, which is figure out someone's reward currency and use that, right? Because many people, it's, oh, I want the freedom to travel, or I want the freedom to buy new hardware. Like, people have the weirdest currencies, or I want to be involved in other teams' businesses. Like, if my manager is like, hey, I want you to get involved with X team's meetings, I'm like, why are you doing this to me? To him, this would be the best reward in the world. I'm like, why are you giving me more meetings?
Wait, to me?
No, not to
you.
Oh,
yeah, to your manager.
Yeah, to my manager. That doesn't sound
like me. He's not me.
We should talk about this. I don't want to do that.
But then, like, you know, Brandon on my team, if I go and involve if I involve him in other teams' business, he's so happy. Right. I'm like, hey, do you want to go see what the Excel team is doing? He's like, oh my God, this is exciting. So fun. Meanwhile, if you wanted me to go to the Excel team's meeting, no offense, Excel team, I don't really want to go, right? So it really is the reward currency, and it is so important for a manager to understand that for each person and take the time to do it, and then life becomes way better
for everybody.
Yeah. For everyone.
Wow, that's really interesting. That's fantastic. It's just such
we'll talk you to death. Life you lessons, think you yeah. want? Yeah, we will talk you to death.
You only have 1 hour, you say.
Yeah, I know. Well, and we're like,
we've got 28 more minutes. We've got 28 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah,
let's go.
But no. So this leads beautifully into interpersonal skills, right? I'm trying to work on mine. I'm not going to lie. I don't come from a big business background. I don't get out enough. I work too hard. I probably don't talk to enough people. And I get nervous. I say stupid things, yeah? I might get emotional and write the wrong email, right? And I'm sorry for that. I'm trying to get better, right? So interpersonal skills are just continual learning, aren't they? Like, we just realize that we're not perfect. We're human, right? And we're trying to get better, yeah? I mean, that's my attitude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, I constantly am learning, let's say, you know, not a ton of wins, a whole bunch of learnings.
No, but one of
the things that I work at a lot is just trying to listen more. I try whatever I can not to impose my point of view. I always have a point of view. I always think that my point of view is right. I always think that, you know, I am better informed than everyone else in the world. I am certainly biased. But I try consciously to work on just listening more. You know, it's surprising just the things that people will tell you just by asking them, like, so why is this important to you?
Right.
Shut up.
Stop
you know?
Talking.
And then I tell you why it's important. And if you're listening, you know, certainly there's some amount of guile in guys, and people don't say exactly what they mean. But to some extent, if you just ask people the question, mm-hmm. they will tell you the answer.
They will tell you who they are, because no one ever asks.
And that, you know, the underlying motivation, like what we're talking about, like all of these things, like listening more, co-creation, just the making a safe space for someone to be themselves, creates this really richness that you can have the ability, to your point, you can send someone a short email if you have a deep amount of trust with that person. It's like, hey, I need you to do this right now. Trust me.
Yeah.
But if you don't know that person, and we get those texts all the time, and we do them, right?
Yeah.
But if you don't know the person, you're like, wait a second, you just sent me a one-line email, and I don't really know you that well, and now I'm worried. Like, what do you think badly of me? Yeah. Did someone say something? And and it sort of it unlocks this spiral on you. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you put in the time, you put money into a relationship bank, then on those times when you need to make a withdrawal, it becomes way easier. So listening more, putting more time into understanding what someone's currency is. reinforcing that, you know, putting more work into a relationship, even a relationship at work, it tends to, you know, we end up spending a lot of time at work. Mm-hmm. And so the more that you invest in any relationship, the better it tends to get. Even if it's sort of a difficult person to work with, like, hey, you at least develop a begrudging respect for the other person. So listening more, trying to understand what their motivations, what the currency is, trying to invest in that relationship wherever you can, helps make the communication and helps make the interpersonal relationships a little bit better the more you put in.
So mine is, you know, people use that line, like, I'm not here to make friends. I'm the opposite.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm always there to make friends.
Those people are lying.
Yeah, they're lying.
Goodbye.
I'm not here to make friends. I'm always here to make friends.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? I'm at a zoo with a bunch of strangers? I'm here to make friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Funny with the giraffes.
I know.
Again.
It's like
giraffes are like your back.
We spend our lifetimes at work,
runs away.
Right? We spend the majority of our waking hours at work. Why would you not make friends? Are you insane?
That would just be boring.
That would
too.
Be boring, yeah, yeah. Right? Plus, everything is then a confrontation or you know something
How
rather than like
you?
A friendly conversation. So I think first thing I do is make friends with everybody. I'm like, tell me everything, all of it, the whole enchilada.
She literally says that first
and
thing.
I said it to him too. So. Yeah. I want to know everything about this pre-human because I love humans. They're so interesting. Why we do things, how we do things, what is our reasoning, like what is our technique and our method. And I always love to learn from people about why they're doing it and how they're doing it, right? So I always like to move to a texting relationship as soon as possible.
What's a texting relationship?
So texting relationship is like email is boring and for like, you know, old people.
Like
but,
me.
Right, like him. He sends email to people.
Lots
I don't
emails.
Even know how to send email.
Yeah.
I'm like,
or read them apparently.
So I don't read anyone's email. But I have to move to a texting relationship where we have each other's phone numbers and we text each other. You notice that everyone in the world has your email, but very few people have your phone number.
And the people that do, you're crank callers or you trust them?
Right. The people who have your number, you trust, right? So my goal is always to have people's number in my phone and to have my number in their phone. So once we've reached that point, I believe we trust each other. So that's my metric. Like, do they have my number? And often it's as simple as like, hey, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, oh my God, I love talking to you. This is super interesting. Can I get your number so I can text you random shit at weird times? And they're usually like, okay, sure.
Cat
sounds
videos.
Good. But it's usually like
you
that.
You think I'm kidding.
But
no,
when, no, I would do that.
You're going to get cat videos.
You're going to get cat videos, Nathaniel.
Not
yet. I didn't get a chance.
Oh, no. Watch out for the cat videos.
Wait. I've got something I've been saving for the cat videos. Hold on.
Oh.
Wow.
Where did you get that?
That's
my friend made it for me.
Wow.
That is the best.
It's cool,
that is
right?
Hilarious.
Nice.
So first, I was impressed. Let me say this. I was impressed by the Tower Bridge behind you, but
amazing.
That's
I
the icing
it.
On the. So
that must have a name. What do you? What
do
is
you
your
call
name
it?
For that?
This is just the finger.
The finger.
Yeah.
Bring out the finger.
So
the
to
finger.
Anyone that's not watching this and listening, this
I love
is 3D
it.
Printed
You're
middle finger.
Finger, everyone.
Wait, guess
is,
which one?
The
yeah.
problem. Yeah, but nope. The problem is that I've got this childlike mentality. You see. And
opportunity.
But what do you do though with interpersonal skills? How do you mix that? You try and communicate on the childlike.
Yes.
But
yes.
You have to
because ultimately everyone's an imposter.
It's all storytelling.
Right? We all feel like we don't belong here. It's a fraud and we got here by accident.
Everyone.
Someone made a mistake in hiring.
Yeah.
Right? There's a lot of people who made
Every
a mistake
person,
in hiring.
I'm sure Satya wakes up. Satya Nadella,
Satya
the CEO
up,
of Microsoft.
Right?
I'm sure he
wakes
up and
like,
how the
hell am I
doing? Did I get here?
He also doesn't say what the hell. But
did I say hell? I thought I said heck. Well,
Satya
oops,
probably,
Satya.
No, he probably like
well,
meditates
like I
and
said,
thinks about this.
He definitely doesn't. Maybe he says, I don't know.
I don't know. But, you know, everyone, they say CEOs have the worst imposter syndrome because they're like, what in tarnation am I doing running this billion-dollar company?
$100 billion company.
It's a big company.
It's a big company. But I believe that most people have imposter syndrome. And when you connect at that level, I open with vulnerability. Like, will you help me with this thing? Because I have no idea what I'm doing. And you seem to know. And everyone's like,
got it.
You know. Everyone
sure.
wants to help.
Everyone wants to help.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then I'm like, this is awesome. You are so helpful. Thank you. You open with vulnerability and you close with gratitude. And I think it works every time.
Yeah.
So
it's what my dad taught me. He went because we used to work in a, well, he had a winery back in the day.
Oh wow.
So I grew up.
I knew I liked you.
Yeah, I grew up in the middle of Sussex, in the middle of the woods. And when I was 6 years old, my dad decided he was gonna build a winery on top of my mum's vegetable garden. So
I'm saying, how did your mom like that? Yeah.
He's American, he's from Connecticut, yeah. He dug this massive hole in the ground with a digger and hired some builders. And then they built this barn. They moved this barn from, like, it's a 16th century barn from 20 miles down the road and put it up and had a winery there, you see. And what he
did, he tell your mom first?
Or was it a secret?
Surprise.
Oh, no, I don't think, well, they got divorced a few years later, but I think that probably
had
probably had a lot to do with it, to be fair. But he always used to say,
was it good?
Well, we used to supply the historic royal palaces and like,
wow,
also, so it was pretty good, I guess. Wine, yeah, it was like
mead to the States, like honey wine. We used to sell it in all the fine restaurants in New York. We were in Whole Foods.
I've had mead.
I would love
with
to
with Ethiopian somewhere. Food. I've had it.
There we go. No. I bet you've read Beowulf, haven't you?
I have.
What?
You've read Beowulf, yeah.
She's not that old.
Oh, okay. So you see, my dad's theory was...
It's old English.
Because my dad went to school in America, right? And he's like, oh, well, everyone will have read Beowulf, so they know what mead is.
Oh, got it. Yeah, we know what mead is. She's
no, I don't know what mead is. I know honey wine is, because I had it with Ethiopian food. Yeah. I didn't know. I know what mead is. What is mead?
Anyway, back to what I was trying. Back to what I was trying. And my dad.
So open with vulnerability. Be like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. He would go up to someone and he'd be like, I know what I need them to get. I know what I need them to do. All I need to do is I need to tell them I've got a problem and ask them what the solution is. And then they're going to suggest the solution that I know is what I want them to do anyway.
Right.
That's exactly what you're saying, right?
Yes. So we call it
the here we go.
We call it the currency of the human.
Dun, 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 dun.
So here, I have a talk on this called How to Get Anything You Want.
One or two talks.
And the entire basis of the talk is this. It's that when you have something that you need done, right? Like I need Jeremiah to give me $1 million.
Nope. Sorry.
Okay. So I need Jeremiah to here's a real thing. I need him to make a list of the cities that we need to do a dev event at. So we're doing a dev event in June. That's not far.
Yeah.
This one needs to choose the cities.
How about London?
Okay.
Okay, perfect.
So I need him to choose the cities. He's not choosing because he's doing other things.
Okay.
Now,
like
work. So what I would do instead of being like, hey, Jeremiah, I need you to make a list of cities, blah, blah, blah. That's a lot of me.
That
right?
never works.
So what I do is I figure out the currency of the human. What are Jeremiah's goals? What are his motivations? What are his conflicts, right? So his goal is that we have
teach everyone
in the world to code. His motivation is he deeply believes that everyone should have equal opportunity to technology.
Regardless
and three,
of upbringing,
the conflict. Yeah, the conflict is that it's really hard to do, right?
Really hard.
Really hard to do that. So how do we do it? Through local events.
Magic.
So what I would do is say, hey, Jeremiah, you know, I've been thinking about that goal you have of teaching everyone in the world, making sure everyone in the world has the equal opportunity to learn tech skills.
Oh, wow, that is my goal.
That is your goal. So I know that that's your goal, and how's your progress going on it? And he'd be like, I'm like, I know we talked about those local events you want to have in many, many cities.
I'm really excited about those local events.
And someone had mentioned you want to do them in June.
Yeah, June.
Right? Yeah. Like, oh, cool, awesome. So is that something that you're still planning to do to achieve your goal, et cetera, et cetera? Is there any way I can help?
Yeah.
And then he's going to be like, I guess I should make a list of
probably
cities. I'm like, yeah. And he's come up with this by himself.
By myself.
Yeah.
And clever.
My thing is always using their words.
Clever.
So figuring out their words and using their words back at them. So however he says his goal, I say it back at him. But it takes a little bit of stalking, right? You need to research this person.
Researching, investigating,
yeah. So
looking
it
up.
It takes a little bit of stalking this person to understand what words they use and what they care about. My thing is if you don't know the currency of the human, you're not in a position to influence them.
Right. I get it. Right.
Yeah.
So this fits into teamwork. How do you
look at that?
Teamwork. We've got 10 minutes for the team.
I love it.
And then a 5 minute relaxed conversation.
Oh, we've been relaxed the whole time.
Oh, yeah, we're chill.
I thought I'm relaxed anyway, to be fair.
Teamwork. Yeah. What do you want to talk about with teamwork?
Well, where do you start with managing, not managing a team? I mean, like, you said that it starts with choosing the right team, didn't you?
Right.
That's what you started with. So first of all, okay, you're obviously going to work out what sort of team you need to deliver the kind of projects that you need to deliver, right? So once you've worked that out and you've got your team members, okay, how do you kind of gel them all together to work together when they're all totally different people?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that is most useful when working with a team. So first is having a clear goal. Why are you together as a team? Are you there to win a sports championship? Are you there to, you know, deliver a certain thing by a certain date? Are you there to make a report? Are you there to teach the world to code? Like, why are you all in the place working together?
So if everyone's not bought in on that, you don't have the right team.
No, you don't have the right team. Yeah. And there's a whole bunch of things you can do at that point. Mm-hmm. But step one really is have a common goal, have something that you're aiming for. Step two is, as we sort of talked about, attracting a diverse set of folks who can represent a whole bunch of different viewpoints and bring them on and hopefully have them passionate about the same end result. Third is create the sort of safe space for them to be themselves, and they could bring their whole self to work and, you know, be part of the team and achieving the business results, as well as feeling like they're empowered to do the things that they really want to do. And then at that point, then it's sort of like foster an environment of trust such that people actually can deliver feedback. Not everyone does their best work every single day. Not every result is exactly what you want. Trust that someone will tell you when they think that you're going slightly off course. And second, you also want to be able to trust that that conversation isn't the end of the relationship and you have to quit and do something else.
Right.
So fostering an environment of trust such that you respect them as a person, you acknowledge that everyone has days when they or their family are sick, they or their families are worried about something else. Like, make sure that they can really be themselves at work. And then provide a framework for them to achieve the things that you need. Like, praise publicly, criticize privately.
Right.
And then at that point, then it kind of runs itself. You know, management and teamwork are kind of the same thing in a well-oiled machine. So it's way less, hey, I need you to deliver this report by 5 o'clock today. It's more like, hey, what can we together do to accomplish our goal? Hey, we have a very important meeting tomorrow. Wouldn't it be awesome to have a pre-read for the person we're going to meet with? Right. Oh, no, we probably need to send that to them soon. Who's going to do that? Oh, you're going to do that. That's awesome. Yeah. That's great. Do you need any help with that? I'd love to help you with that. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of like, it's not, you know, an iterative process. It really is the entirety of like trying to achieve something. Like, one thing builds on the other, and no single thing stands by itself.
So one thing I like to use, I haven't done not done a very good job of it, is that thing where you say, this person is the owner, this person is a contributor, this person is an approver, right?
Clarifying the roles.
Yeah, clarifying the roles. I feel like that's the biggest issue in teams that usually happens.
Yeah.
People are like, no one knows who owns it.
Oh no, that's not my job.
Or it's like, oh, it's not my job, or I think I own it, all of this. My thing is, who is fired? Right? It's forget all this ownership business. Ownership sounds fun. Being fired is not fun. So it's like, don't be willing to own something that you're not willing to be fired for.
Right?
I ask everyone, if this thing doesn't get done, who is fired? And it shouldn't be everyone in the room. That's not very good.
It's ownership. Usually Donna.
It's usually me. I'm like, okay, I'm fired.
Yeah.
But ownership, I think of as like, who is fired? Contributors are not fired. They contribute, and they only contribute once the owner says, okay, here's what we need to be contributed.
Yeah.
An approver is usually like some upper management somewhere, right? So that's how I think about teamwork, is breaking it down. And this is a really good reminder to actually do this with my team. Like, now we have a new set of projects and such, and maybe for you guys too, is to say, what do you own, as in what are you fired for if it doesn't get done? Who are the contributors? You list them. Like, the owner decides. These are the contributors. And contributors, if they don't contribute, they're also fired. And then the approver should be like someone, maybe not you every time, right? Maybe the approver should be someone else. But that, I feel, really helps with autonomy And I found that when people have autonomy to do their work, they actually do really good work. And it doesn't have to be huge autonomy. Oh, here's, you know, $10 million and do this work. It's usually...
I would love $10 million.
I would love that too. Usually it's like your job is to write the weekly newsletter every week. It's our job to help you get the content. If you need help getting the content, tell me. But I'm going to rely on you to write the weekly newsletter that goes out every Friday. Right. And you own that. We are all contributors and the approver is probably just yourself, unless you want someone else to be the approver. So I found when you put it on the owner to decide all of the other roles, it actually works out incredibly well rather than me assigning all the roles. Right. So in teamwork, it is for me specifically, it's about empowering others to make their own decisions and make their own choices over who they want involved in their business in the first place.
Right. So it's less about management and more about leading, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Inspiring and empowering.
Inspiring. Yeah. And one of the things I've learned the hard way is often I have to do step one with them, right? So say I want to do...
Starting things is hard.
Yeah, starting is hard. So a lot of people get paralyzed because they want to do it perfect. Yeah. So often I will do the shittiest first draft you've ever seen.
Author's term.
Yeah, author term, shitty first draft.
It came from Hemingway. How can you not like
it
Hemingway?
It did not come from Hemingway. Yes. It came from Anne Lamott.
The first draft of everything is shit. Ernest Hemingway.
It came from Anne Lamott.
No.
But, okay, so...
Who are you going to believe, Ernest Hemingway?
You know, we needed to do this newsletter, so I wrote the first version. It wasn't good. It was like, here's some sections. Words go here. Tweets go here. Something goes here.
It's like seven different colors, different font sizes.
Putting the framework in helps someone like, oh, I see which direction.
Because then you can iterate. You can improve it. You can shape it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Getting your hands dirty to show them what to do. Definitely. It's really important.
It makes it way less scary, too.
Yeah.
It's a bit like what I'm doing. Like, you know, when I move forwards with my podcast, once I've actually nailed the total process right, so that I can actually delegate really easily, then I will hire someone to do some of the bits. But the thing is, I don't trust people enough
to do the first one.
Yeah. The thing is, all it takes is for you to like say someone said something to me. Normally I don't do video, right? So we'll have like a conversation and they might say something to me and they'll be like, don't share that. So then I have to go in and edit it. It's like, well, if I'm going back in to edit that, I may as well edit it anyway. And I'm interviewing the best people. So like I absorb that information. Like you guys are the best people, right?
You guys are a bunch of great people.
I don't know how we snuck in here, but this is
highly recommended. And you know, Cambodia, dude. Now that is super.
Cambodia, dude. That's your name.
Hashtag Cambodia, dude.
Yeah. I should be Cambodia, dude.
But that makes the teamwork right. The interpersonal skills. The communication, all of that stuff, it makes the teamwork because you understanding like about their backgrounds, what drives them as individuals, and then bringing them on board with the bigger goal of the company's mission, right? And then the project as well, because it all needs to fit in together, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections too. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thank you.